not too tired. Quite a long program. Yeah, it's very long. It's actually very complex, and the scope of the work is quite vast, I think. So my feeling, having seen the films on a number of occasions, but also recently watching Visibility Moderate and The Irreducible Difference of the Other together, was to sort of make a connection with them and then leave a little bit more of a space for other inputs for the last two films, if that's all right with you, Vivian. Because basically it seemed to me that Visibility Moderate represents the kind of bridge, in a way, between... I mean, okay, it's 32 years between Visibility Moderate and The Irreducible Difference, but there does seem to be connections. So that there's a kind of bridge between the New York work, the first Super 8, low budget, no wave, non-funded work, and the kind of, well, what came after, really, which was the London films and then the Irish work. So I kind of, well, for two reasons, I felt that Visibility Moderate marks a moment, really, not just because it's a kind of almost the last knockings of that late modernism in terms of the way the film works. It's early 80s. It has that moment of, well, almost like before the paradigm shift to the kind of digital globalized world that we now inhabit. So there's that moment, but at the same time, there do seem to be a lot of connections between that and The Irreducible Difference in terms of the journeys. I won't go on long, but I saw them as kind of not parallel journeys, but journeys. The first, obviously, in some respects, from New York to Ireland. What came to my mind was the Bob Dylan song, No Direction Home, but somehow an exploration for a possibility of a direction home from New York to Ireland. Obviously, there's one protagonist or one central female character who is kind of the tourist, but in a sense, I felt it was very much you're looking for a return or the possibility of a return at that moment.
Having lived in New York for 8 years, and it gives you a different perspective, a completely different perspective coming back, and things haven't changed in the meantime, and all this... dirty protests, H Block, and all the political stuff that was going on at the time. There were the people I met in Dublin at the time were anarchists, and there were all these marches, a whole range of different political groups that were sort of fighting with each other on the left. And it was also mixed in with representations of Ireland that I'd seen, like in cinema, often usually made by people, English people or Americans, and that, I was commenting on that, I think, in the film, especially John Hind postcards that people from Ireland will be familiar with. And it's sort of what is very familiar is also very strange. I think that's what it's about, really, yeah. And so it's also... You know, as I do all the time, I mix documentary, little bits of documentary with kind of fiction or fantasy or imagination or dreams or whatever, yeah.
Yeah, because it seemed to me that the formal aspects of your work continue from Visibility Moderate through, mm-hmm. in terms of that. I see it as a kind of range, just because it's sort of, I don't want to oversimplify, but this kind of range of dualities. From the urban and the landscape, the personal and the political, the rehearsed, the spontaneous. There's many things that you can kind of build a kind of context around. And I felt that this kind of particular kind of almost quintessential style that you have, which is the sort of the jump cuts, the theme and variations, the riffing on various things, the return, the breaks, and so on. Is something that we see again in The Irreducible Difference, but not so much in the last two films that we've seen. So there seem to be links between these two films, as I say, across three decades. And I find it also, obviously, the second, the irreducible difference takes us on another kind of journey as well.
Yeah, it's also how you grow up. Like, I grew up in Donegal in a very small fishing place, and there's little bits of that there, that man with the scythe, the farmer. I mean, I knew him from a childhood, and he knows me, and he's just such an amazing sort of presence, even though he's only there for a little short while. And there's little bits in there that come from my growing up, you know, there in that place. And I just think the world is such an amazing, you know, just living in cities, living there, and all those kind of. I mean, I suppose, I feel like I've crossed a lot of time, you know, because like the school I went to was practically medieval, boarding school I was at, in its outlook and everything. You know, I mean, things have changed dramatically and are enormously, you know, really in the last 30 years. Yeah.
So we have this sort of almost personal portrait of Ireland in a way, or you're revisiting it.
Yeah, and kind of wonder at everything. I mean, I don't give the answers to things, but there's always things in there that I'm interested in or at that point, you know.
But then we move in the next film from Ireland to the world, essentially. So it sort of embraces globalization. It's almost like the kind of paradigm shift has come, and we go, certainly we go to Egypt, but we go to other places, and it's sort of, in a way, it revisits the political, obviously. And
there's a sense of time there as well, right. The thing with the stone, you know, her talking about the woman who works with the sculptor, Eileen McDonough. I really like that sense of deep time before there were humans on Earth, you know, Paleolithic times and when there were humans and before that. I've always been interested in that. That is there in Visibility Modern too, in the Portal Dolmens, for example. Yeah, in Ireland, they're all around the place. There's a lot of remain, you know, a lot of the farmers didn't touch those because they were superstitious, you know, so they're still there, and also because Ireland wasn't industrialised, so there's a lot of, you know, thousands of them there. But that's idea as well is there in the last film, in Augenblick, that sense of time, like, what are we on this planet? And our time on Earth is so short, you know, it just goes by like that. And what are we doing having these wars, you know?
Yeah, because it kind of resonates with the first sort of words in The Irreducible Difference. I think it's Artaud's words, which have to do with what's happening, but also what may happen, or conceptually what could happen.
There's other ways we could be living. There's other. We don't have to. This is not inevitable how we live now, yeah. That's true. And Artaud is there because he did come to Ireland in the 30s, and he... He went out to the Aran Islands and stayed in a hotel in Galway, and he had a breakdown when he was out on the Aran Islands, and a psychotic breakdown, and he managed to make his way back to Dublin, and he got arrested there and sent back to France, and from then on in he was in a mental hospital.
Right.
Yeah.
So
that visit is very documented. There's a lot of documentation there around that visit and his writings on it. Yeah.
Because it seems to me this I think all your films generate ideas, and the great thing about them is that they don't prescribe how the audience should read the films. So it's kind of this sense of you're constructing a patchwork of something in a way, and part of the film requires the audience to sort of make sense or connect with stuff in order to produce some kind of coherent whole. Am I going off?
I mean it's like little pieces of reality sometimes, and sometimes something from the imagination, dreams, little bits of radio, just things I've been reading, whatever ideas, and the challenges to make that into a shape that will hold people, even though it's not, it doesn't have a story. It's often elliptical, returning. I enjoy doing that anyway. Whether it works or not, I don't know. But and I love sound as well. I'm very interested in sound. So
I was wondering how far you thought the shift in technology, because obviously the digital move has made a huge difference to the way the films look, and also the scope of the films, because obviously we've got arguably bigger philosophical questions going on from Irreducible Difference. Is how do you feel no longer working with Super 8? What has the digital technology allowed you to do? Do you feel completely that's it's kind of two moments in time, or?
Well, I love film, and it really has its own presence, you know, definitely, for sure. And what was great about Super 8 was that it was, apart from being cheap to buy, you had access to it, was that it had the soundtrack on it. So the sound was in sync automatically. It was a little magnetic tape strip was on the edge. And that used to give, you know, you didn't have quite control over the sound. So, I mean, you'd direct a microphone, or you'd give a microphone to someone to hold up for someone, but you'd often pick up other sounds from the wild track and so often it had a texture to it that was really quite different from 16mm work, I think, you know. I mean, it was very fresh, and you'd have police sirens coming in, sounds from the street, and I got carried away with the idea of sound. I used to go around recording things like, I don't know, pinball machines or jukeboxes or whatever, and mix it in. And the mix at that time with the Super 8 work was incredibly simple. It was just with a projector, so it was very touch and go. You know, if you make a mistake, that's it. The sound's mixed and isn't there anything you can do. So it's fantastic now to have the opportunity to mix sound. And also, I mean, I am interested in recording sound. And in Red Moon Rising, there are a lot of people doing sound there. There's sound artists, apart from the person doing the location sound, and he was very good. And anyhow, he had microphones taped to the tree, and it was really intricate sort of work. Very exciting, I think. And I like to do field recordings. I just think it's fascinating, yeah.
How, or maybe you could sort of say something about your increased interest in performance, maybe, because obviously the latter two films that we've seen today, Red Moon Rising and Augenblick, tend to be built around, it seems to me, a kind of idea of performance art.
Yeah, although it's a little different. The second one, they're actors. The first, Red Moon Rising, they're performance artists, mm-hmm. and they were fantastic to work with, and really great with the camera. It was a different experience. I mean, the actors are really good as well, but I'd never really worked with actors before, apart from Alwyn Fuere, but she's kind of a performance artist also. Her work is very broad. So, it's a different thing. I'm not really used to working with actors, and I find that actually very difficult to get actors, because the agents, the people I contacted, they couldn't make head or tail of what I was doing, because there was no script. And they didn't tell half the actors that I was looking to work with them. And I only found out that later through a roundabout way, through friends of friends. They hadn't even told them. So I was waiting there, wait, am I going to make this film in 2 weeks' time? It's really hard when you have a budget. You have to plan, you have to have, you're going to make it on certain dates, because everyone is free at that time. And then the actors aren't available. So that was really a challenge. But I won't go through agents again, that's for sure. I'll just go to the actress directly.
Do you think, though, that the whole, your kind of connection now, or experience with female performers and performance artists, does that somehow chime with your interest in the whole idea of female being, or the irigaray ideas that somehow seem to kind of be shot through in your work?
No, I just think that women are neglected in representation, full stop. They're just sort of have been bypassed. Now, there's a bit of noise going on at the moment, it's about time. But, I mean, it kind of, in theatre, it started up with Waking the Feminists about a year ago in Ireland, a really big movement, and it's really so high time, and it kind of seems to be taken off in every area. I mean, I would think about this as a very serious question, that the question of the world being highly imbalanced and that being very bad for everybody, for men and women. And of course, if you have a masculine bias in the way things are run and the way governments are run and everything, and you have all this interest in guns and you have interest in wars and that guy in Korea and Trump. And I mean, at the moment, it's at a real peak. And thank goodness those students from Florida and all the other young people in America are out there saying, we've had enough of this. You know, it's just so completely crazy, you know. So, yeah, I mean, I think Irigaray was right in that there is the imbalance. It's not about equal pay. It's much more than that. It's about subjectivity. It's about even looking at women as being a human being, you know. So, and of course, you can extrapolate from that to any other black or people who are not white male, you know. So, I mean, that's just, it just seems to be that way, yeah. And I mean, it's high time that for our survival, it is a very serious question, for our survival, it has to change, you know. It really has to change fast, because the earth is, we humans are destroying the earth anyway, rapidly. We're just overbreeding, we're, you know, the oceans, the plastic, I mean, it's going on and on each year. It's kind of getting more and more, the ice melting, you know, so.
I was going to, that was sort of the ecological concerns of your films, which seem to be increased with each film. Mm. There is also a very strong sense of an elemental, so that, you know, we have nature, rocks.
Well, we're nature, we're organic, you know, we're not going to live forever, you know, and just to it's important that we become aware of our fragility, of our vulnerability, that that's, it's important that we recognize that instead of trying to be super strong, you know, super powerful. If we try to have control, super control, it just creates paranoia. And there has to be a point where we don't know where we're going, or that letting go and that trusting is a really important thing.
So do you see your films as exploring possibilities in terms, or merely pointing to the fact that we need to explore them?
Yeah, I'm ultimately a very optimistic person, and I love being alive. I love, you know, happy. I love this, you know, I think it's a very exciting time what we're in, even though it's kind of depressing in some ways. But I just think it's very important that people, that we do believe, and that we hold on to our imaginations, that we can, that there is a way out of this mess. You know, we have to believe that, and sometimes the change can come really fast. You know, we've seen that in history. So,
just a final word, and we can sort of throw it open to the audience, so to speak. I just probably neglected talking about the aesthetic of your work. I mean, the poet. The beauty, really, and the colour, and I love the way that both ways that you work with the Super 8, you know, the quite jagged jump cuts and so on, have their own beauty, but also now with the mature work, shall we say, or the more recent work, the beautiful composition, the colour, the kind of almost the long take. It's almost you've gone for the long take.
That's partly to do with the technology. Okay. That's partly to do with DSLR cameras. You can't move them very much. You just turn it on. And anyway, the image is so beautiful with a big sensor that, you know, that's, you just set up the frame and let it go, you know. But there is an issue with those cameras and not being able to move much.
So you've made kind of virtue of necessity to some extent in that way.
Yeah. But it's also getting older, maybe, you know, you're able to sit still. I don't know.
I don't want to hog the questions, so I don't know if people have questions they'd like to ask Vivian, or any comments or reactions to the films. Some of you may know them well, some may be new to the work, so should we see if anyone has anything else to say?
I do write loads
of scribble, loads of notes and things I'm reading and stuff like that. I mean, I'd love to write, but I haven't written a script for a film. I don't do that. But
just for the sake of, for a piece of writing, for a small book, or a little essay.
Well, I have written stuff, but it's very, I find it difficult. Yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't come easy to me, you know.
You have the camera as the pen, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Denise was in Visibility and Margaret, she's the woman with the little baby. The child.
It's just like, well, it's like, I don't. Like, where are they today? Mm.
And a lot of those people you would know as well, isn't that right?
Yeah. You wouldn't know.
Yeah, it's interesting that the films at a certain moment, especially when they're 20, 30 years ago, they're a document as well, somehow, of a time, and of a mood and of a texture of a time, yeah?
Concerns of the time.
Exactly, yeah. And they become significant as well, so you've got this added layer of meaning almost.
Sorry, it actually really struck me as well about, I think you've just said that a sense of great excitement, but also great sadness, and both in the Irreducible Difference and in Visibility films. It felt like you were documenting two very specific moments, one on a national level, or one in terms of a city, and the other a much more global perspective. But there was in both of those, to my mind, a huge excitement, but also somehow a sense of wistfulness, or perhaps a kind of growing, maybe a disappointment or something. There was a sense of both operating at the same time. Is that the case?
There's different moods, of course, yeah. I mean, I think that's true. There's sometimes it's kind of playful, and sometimes it's sort of, there is a sadness there, yeah. That's true, yeah.
It was great to see all those together, and it was a really brilliantly curated programme, and it's wonderful to see the earlier films up against the more recent ones and to map through the themes. And I'm wondering about the not speaking of the women, which I think was repeated through two or three of the films towards the end. And I think the more abstract sound became more and more choreographed and more composed. But it wasn't, I'm not saying that it was more fixed or anything, but it seemed to have focused you more and more on this not speaking sound collage soundscapes that were being created. I just wondered if you could say something about that.
Well, I mean, I think the idea with the sound in The Irreducible Difference of the Other, it sounds like it is coming from the body, right? So it's there, and it's also, so it's coming, it's from the here, from the belly, you know, and it's body sounds. So it's this bringing you back to your physicality or your body there, that sense of that, you know? And I've tried to get that in with the landscape as well, with just the muck and the, you know, the rain and that stuff, you know, the stuff of the earth. And the other bit of it is maybe something to do with pre-language, you know, with maybe, like Artaud talks about how he finds it very difficult to use language to express things he wants to say, that the idea, he has these ideas and they slip away, and how sometimes language can be very difficult to just, it's very difficult, I mean, language is hugely important, of course, but it's very difficult to use language to pin things down. That's what poets do. But Artaud's work is about expressing stuff with the body, with sounds, and in his theatre. It's all about that, making strange sounds, you know. And so that fitted in there because of that. But then I met Jennifer Walsh, who's an expert at doing that. She was the one who's making all that sound. She was the one in Red Moon Rising. Singing and using her voice that way, and she's and she also created composed the music for the last film for Augenblick. So she, that take at the end of Red Moon Rising where Jennifer's making those sounds and the woman singing that crazy song about Chia Girl, that was done in one take. That was not rehearsed, that was just one take. And Jennifer's such a pro that she was able to, she was listening, she could hear the other person, and she was able to use her voice to be exactly correct with the other person. I mean, she's just such, you know, I thought it was so amazing she did that. It was just one take we did.
So what's the importance of and significance of aloneness in your films?
Aloneness?
Aloneness, yes, because what I noticed is that there
That's
is
right.
aloneness.
Okay.
Even though there is, okay, not in the first one, which which we were shown, but in the rest of the films, the sense of distance between people and also kind of distance from yourself?
Well, I don't really know exactly. I mean, I do know, I could say something about that. In the last film, there's a one scene where you hear the words idleness, shelter, and solitude. And they're the three things that are going away from our lives or no longer. We're lacking that now. It's harder and harder to have that, to have solitude. And we need to have that in order to use our imaginations and to create, because our minds are being colonized by Facebook, right? Et cetera, et cetera. And you take the underground now, or in Ireland at the Lewis, and everybody's on their smartphones all the time. It's I think solitude is very important, because because of what I just said. I mean, there's probably other things there with solitude. I don't really know exactly. I mean, I sometimes wonder myself why it's like that. I don't know.
I like the idea of idleness, actually. Yeah. I think we're all too busy doing nothing, or not doing nothing, but doing too much, essentially.
And being ashamed or being afraid of being idle, that it's like a bad thing to be. You know, the way children's play is structured now, and in the past, when I was growing up, you were left alone to just play, you know. I think it's important for your imagination, and we need our imaginations because as the world is becoming more and more fascist, and that's what Deleuze says, actually. Yeah. It's true. And I think Artaud was onto that too. Yeah.
There is a kind of meditative quality, certainly I think by Red Moon Rising, it's almost like the your heartbeat is slowing down.
Yeah.
With slow.
That's meant to be in the film, that's deliberate. And it's why people are going and doing yoga and getting back to needing to do meditation, because people are going crazy. There's more and more craziness, and people find it more and more difficult to just be alone or to slow down, and yet, you know, are needing that, racing minds, etc., you know.
Any other?
Yeah. It may be a really stupid question, but I found the conversation, I presume it wasn't a scripted conversation about food and eating at the end of...
It wasn't scripted.
I'm moving from NutriBullets to cannibalism.
I took
cannibalism.
A big chance on that one. I just let them at it. No, I did say to them, I just want you to talk about healthy, you know, because they're different ages. You know, maybe what do we do to stay healthy and that. And it just went on its own journey. Luckily for me, they started, because otherwise, it was shot over a good while, you know, and I thought it was incredible they started talking about cannibalism at the end.
It kind of chimes with and also with the idea of temporality and the passage of time that sort of underpins all your films in a way. You know, time is always kind of temporality rather than time itself is always kind of an issue time and space.
Yeah, there's also a thing too that I really like is not having total, it's about that control I was talking about. Like in that film, I just let it go, let the conversation go, and I was taking a chance. And I think if you do anything you do that's going to be in any way interesting, you've got to take that chance. You can't have that control. Control shuts things down. So you have to risk falling on your face or risk it not working. Just take a chance with it. I think that's very important. I try to do that. That's part of my thing. I try to do that.
I think that's very rare for a filmmaker. It's probably why your films reach the parts that other films don't reach, in a way, because you do address stuff that...
I have sleepless nights editing.
Any final comments or questions? Well, Vivian, thank you very much.
Thanks for coming along.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vivian. Thank you, Bev. Yes. Thank you, all of you. I just want to make. I just want to say thank you to the ICA and to everybody at the SA Film Festival as well. And also just to draw your attention that there's four more events as part of the SA Film Festival over the next couple of days. So tomorrow in Birkbeck in Beamy, where all the events are free as well, we have Horace Tapscott Musical Griot with a discussion with Stuart Baker. That's by Barbara McCullough. And he's a jazz musician that she's made an essay portrait of. Then also in Birkbeck tomorrow, we have The Sun Island, the first film by the theorist Thomas Alcesser, and he'll be here in conversation with Erica Carter. And then the next day we have No Intenso Agora, excuse my terrible Brazilian Portuguese, by Raul Moreira Salles. And Lucia Nagib is going to be in conversation with him. I think it's a real highlight of the festival as well. And then we're going to end with Star, which is found footage from films from forever, from since film was made, of the night sky. So yeah, I welcome you to come to all of those. Check out the SA Film Festival online. Mm-hmm.